Morning to you all. It's good to be with you again. And we're looking together in the New Testament scriptures at the passage that was read for us in Matthew chapter 15. We live in days of swift judgment, don't we? It's a terrible thing. If somebody says something in public nowadays, there's 4 million people on Facebook that have got an opinion on it. And it's all out there, and you're not allowed to say anything politically incorrect. If you do, your reputation can be trashed in a second. And it's a pretty awful thing. This is one of the passages in the Bible where people who read it sometimes want to be very judgmental about Jesus, because it does seem like he's being pretty unpleasant. The Jesus who we talk about so often is the Jesus who is kind, gentle, warm-hearted, and caring. And yet, that is not the Jesus that's always talked about in the Bible. There's also the Jesus who is very clear about the reality of people's lives, very clear about what they need to do to be right with God. In fact, just before the passage that was read for us, you can read about how Jesus dealt with very religious people and told them that they had serious problems, and how he explained to his disciples that the problem is not particularly what you put into your body, it's what comes out of your heart. It's the reality of the condition of the heart. Now, that is not the pump that pumps the blood around the body. It's the center of your person, that part of you that drives the reality of your life. That's what God's interested in. And although there's plenty in the Bible to tell us that God is interested in lots of other things, the thing he's most interested in is your heart and how that relates to him. And sometimes it's necessary that God should come pretty toughly, if that's a real word, in a hard way to each one of us to make us wake up to the reality of the state of our heart. And I think that's what's happening in this passage that we've read together. So we're going to think about it in a minute. But before we go on to look at the woman and her situation, I want you to think as a church about some general things. And I want to say that I think that this is telling us, and telling the disciples who are with Jesus, that we need to be ready to face up to our responsibilities as Christians to the community where we are at that moment. Now, Jesus had taken these disciples away. In a sense, they'd been having a hard time of it. And he'd taken them right up to the very borders of Israel. If you could see a map of that part of Palestine now, you would go right up to the border of Syria. Now, I don't think Jesus actually crossed the border. I think he spent his whole ministry within Israel, or the Israel that was there in the time of the Bible. But he certainly went up to this place. I think it was quite deliberate, because I think there was a prophecy, in a sense, about that in the Old Testament. Do you remember that when you come to, I think it's 1 Kings chapter 17, a prophet just appears on the scene, as if from nowhere. His name is Elijah the Tishbite. And he comes on the scene, and he says to the wicked king, it's not going to rain until I say so. And then he goes. And we're told a couple of things about where he goes. First of all, he goes to a valley where the birds feed him. And then God tells him to go to the borders of Sidon, because there's a woman there. And that, I think, was a prophecy that God's ultimate salvation was for more than just the Jewish people. And there was Elijah thinking, why do I want to go to a Canaanite woman of all people? The Canaanites were horrible. They were idol worshippers. They were child killers. They sacrificed children. Can you believe that? But that's what Canaanites did. And yet God sends his prophet to bring the message of salvation to a Canaanite woman. And now Jesus takes his disciples and he takes them all the way from Jerusalem and Judea and right up through the countryside, right up to the borders where these cities of Tyre and Sidon were. And they were cities that had a bad reputation in their own right. And Jesus goes right up there and his disciples must think, why is he taking us there? He's taking them there to meet a Canaanite woman. And he's taking them there to show them that wherever you are, there is an opportunity for mission work as a believer. Wherever you are, wherever God takes you, whatever situation he puts you in, he is giving you an opportunity to serve him. And as a church, you need to bear that in mind. Wherever you are, Jesus put himself in a place where the message of salvation was needed. And the woman came at an inconvenient time for the disciples because they thought they were going to have a rest and a bit of learning. And Jesus was teaching them a big lesson. And it's easy for us to say, I'm too busy, I need some time for myself. And there are times when we need a rest, I'm not decrying that. But not as often as they seem to think nowadays, when everybody's encouraged to have as much me time as possible. The only person entitled to say to you, me time, is Jesus. Jesus time. That's the time we have to have. And the second thing I want to say is this. And I'd have to be careful how I explain this, but I hope you'll see what I mean. It's not our job in mission to make coming to Jesus easy. See, we live in days when there are plenty of people who would say, put your hand up, you're a Christian. Walk up to the front, you're a Christian. Come to church on Sunday, you're a Christian. But that's not what the Bible says. And I think Jesus' point to his disciples here was you don't have to spend your time making it easy for people. You need to tell them the truth. Because unless anybody understands the truth, they won't be saved. They won't come to God as they are supposed to come to God. And so we mustn't compromise. As Christians, we want to be warm-hearted, we want to be welcoming, we want people to come into our churches. We want to be as friendly and as personable and as pleasant and as welcoming as we possibly can be. But we don't do anybody any favours if we don't tell them the truth. And that's the crunch, isn't it? Sometimes we just have to tell them the truth. We can do it in a gentle way. And I think the trouble with reading things is we don't always get the picture exactly, do we? Although I think here we're supposed to get a picture about the Lord Jesus Christ. So just a few little thoughts about mission as a church as they come out from what Jesus does here. And then I want to say a few things about being saved by grace. And I want to say the first thing about being saved by grace is this. We have to realize our need. Here was this woman, and she's heard that Jesus has come. I don't know how she's heard it, but it seems if you read the Gospels that wherever Jesus went, people knew that he was there. His character must have been extraordinary, mustn't it? Wherever he went, people knew that he was there. And people knew the stories about him. Despite the fact there were all these people saying, it's not true, it's not true, it's not true, don't believe it. The people knew better. They thought it was true. They didn't understand it. Many of them were never saved, even though they knew it was true. And as Jesus comes to this place, looking to withdraw with his disciples and help them and teach them, people know he's there. And they come. And this woman, this, we're told, a Canaanite woman from that vicinity, from exactly the same place as the place in 1 Kings 17, came to Jesus. And she was crying out, "Lord, Son of David, have mercy on me. My daughter is demon-possessed and suffering terribly." I love that. I love that woman. She was more concerned with her daughter than herself, but she saw it as a mercy to herself that her daughter should be healed. So there's something lovely about this woman, isn't there? She's a lovely mother. And she knows that her daughter's situation is not just a physical illness. There seems to be, to me anyway, some sort of physical effects. And people nowadays poo-poo the thought of demon possession. We live in a world, in the Western world anyway, where people just laugh about that. The devil. Huh. But I could take you to places in India and places in China where nobody would go, the devil, huh? Where people know about the things that can happen to people. And there is no doubt that at the time Jesus was on earth, and particularly in the 3 years that he was carrying out his public ministry, there was a massive upsurge of devilish, demonic activity in that community. Why wouldn't there be? The enemy knew that this was the key battleground. And he started with Jesus himself in the wilderness. The devil came and tempted him. And he failed. And in fact, that was the start of the end for him. But he didn't go away, and he hasn't gone away. And he's still around, and he's driving things in different ways today. So this child was in a bad way, even if we don't know exactly what that was. And this mother came to Jesus. She knew she had a problem. And you know, today, I believe the devil is at work in our society, and he's working in the ways that suit our society. He doesn't have to do demon possession in our society. People laugh at that. Why does he want to do that? He can do drink and drugs and sex and rock and roll and all that sort of thing, which people will pile into without a single thought and end up in a disastrous situation with broken lives and damaged lives and nowhere to go. And not just that, but the have it and have it now society that we live in, and the debt that people get into, and the destruction of that debt. I don't know whether, I suppose because I'm getting old now, I occasionally do happen to have the television on in the afternoon. Do you ever watch daytime TV? It's mind-numbing, I have to tell you that. But the adverts are all loan companies where you don't need a credit background. They payday loans. And you look, and they never say it, but they have to put it on the screen because the law says they have to. And I see it every time. Now, I don't know whether it's just that my mind is drawn to figures or what, but I see things like APR 4,216%. And I go, what? But obviously, people who want something don't. They don't see that. That's blindness, isn't it? Who gives them that blindness? And who drags them into such debt and such disaster that they don't know where to turn and their lives are wrecked and ruined forever? So the devil is really at work. And I don't know about any of you here. I don't know your situation. Perhaps you're finding some of these things are true. Do you realize you've got a problem? She realized she had a problem. And she realized something more than that. She realized that she couldn't do anything about it. She had a problem and she couldn't solve it. It was a problem that was beyond her. My daughter is suffering terribly. And you know, you won't come to Jesus until you know you have a problem that no one else can deal with. You won't. As long as you think you can sort it out yourself, you'll stick with it. And you need to know that you can't sort out your problem with God. You can't sort out your problem with sin. Nothing you do can solve that if you don't come to Christ. She came to Christ because she knew there was nothing else that she could do. Well, she knew her problem. How did she deal with it? Well, she came to Jesus and she said, the words are important. Never just trip over words in the Bible. Stop and think. What are they saying? Lord, Son of David, have mercy on me. Now, when you just read that, you think, that's fine. But actually, it wasn't. What she was saying was that you're a king, Jesus. You're an earthly king. You're a human being, and you're an earthly king. That's what Son of David means. Now, I know Son of David is important biblically, but for this woman, she wasn't Jewish. She was a Canaanite. And all she could see was someone who, if she said, you're a king, would do something for her. But it wasn't the right approach to Jesus. She hadn't thought it through. Do you know, so many people haven't thought it through with Jesus. They want the Jesus that they want. They don't want the Jesus who's revealed in the Bible. If you think Jesus was just a good man, albeit a really good man, a really, really good man, an incredibly good man, Jesus will say, you don't understand me. You don't understand me. If you think that Jesus was a good example, an example that we could all follow, look at the way he dealt with people. Well, I don't know about here, actually, but what a wonderful example he is. Jesus will say, you haven't got it, have you? You don't understand me at all. Perhaps you look at Jesus and you think, he's a good social campaigner for human rights. He stands up for people. He stands up for the poor and the dispossessed. And that's the sort of Jesus I want. And Jesus will say, you haven't understood me at all, have you? You don't know me. Or perhaps you think, well, he's the founder of Christianity, isn't he? A bit like Mohammed. And, the founders of Hinduism, Buddha, many other religions, he's just like them. Jesus would say, you haven't got it at all, have you? And you think Jesus should be honored? And you sing the songs, but there's nothing in your heart to go with the words you're singing. You know, it's a really old children's hymn. I often say my prayers, but do I ever pray? And do the wishes of my heart go with the words I say? Someone wrote some really good children's hymns, didn't they? Very challenging, that, I think. But you see, if you don't see Jesus the way he really is, it's a waste of time. And how does Jesus react to this woman when she says that to him? Silence. He answered not a word. It's quite hard, isn't it? Here's this woman. Her heart's breaking for her daughter. And she comes to Jesus and she pleads with him. And he answers not a word. Don't criticize Jesus, my friends. You be very careful when you're reading the Bible and there's something you don't quite understand and it seems like God or Jesus is being unreasonably harsh. And you begin to think, can I blame God? Can I blame Jesus? Don't do it. God knows more than you. Jesus knew exactly what was going on in this woman's heart. You and I don't, do we? We just get this account. And Jesus knew that she hadn't yet understood who he is. She understood that he could do wonderful things, but she didn't know who he was. And then we get the disciples coming in on the scene. And she's obviously carried on, outside the door perhaps, shouting, Jesus, come and help me. And the disciples say, well, get fed up with this. Can't you send her away? Do something. Just send her away. And then Jesus says something to his disciples. He doesn't say this to the woman. He says it to his disciples. I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel. And I think what he's saying is, you think, you're thinking now, as this woman is shouting, you're thinking, well, he's not going to do anything for her. She's a foreigner. So he might as well send her away. And Jesus says, you think I came only for the lost sheep of Israel, don't you? That's what you think. And while they're saying this, this woman comes in. So she ain't giving up, is she? Perhaps you've felt a drawing to Jesus. And as you felt that drawing and you felt you should do something yourself about it, something stopped you. You haven't quite gone all the way that you should go because something gets in the way. Perhaps on a particular Sunday, one of the preachers here has preached something, and in your heart, you know it's right. And in your heart, there's a movement that says, I ought to go to Jesus. And then you go home and you make the dinner, or eat the dinner, or play with the children, or as I normally do on a Sunday afternoon, have a kip. And when you wake up, wash up, get up, whatever. It's gone. And you haven't come to Jesus. You've just thought you should. But you haven't actually done it. Well, this woman didn't give up. She came in. She got into the place where Jesus was somehow and knelt before him and said, Lord, help me. No son of David anymore, is there? Lord, just Lord, you are the Lord. I'm on my knees. I'm worshiping you. Help me. Now, I think at this point, Jesus is trying to make sure that this woman really understands what he is about. So he says these words that in English sound terrible. Well, then, even not in English, they're not great. It is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs. Now, the one saving grace is that in Greek there are several words for dogs. One of them is for wild dogs and one of them is for tame dogs. And the word Jesus uses is for tame dogs, household pets. So, in a sense, it's in a family situation already. He's already saying to this woman, well, you know, I'm a Jew, you're a Gentile. Why are you coming to me? What I've got is for the Jews, isn't it? God has blessed the Jewish nation. At this point, they were still, even though their country was a tiny country compared to what it had been, they were still seen as God's promised people. And this woman says, I agree with you. So even though we're hard on Jesus for saying it, the woman says, no, you're right. You are right. But, even if you wouldn't give your children's dinner to the dogs can hang around the table and pick up the crumbs, can't they? Now, if anybody's got dogs, they understand that picture. No problem. I mean, I've got three dogs now, and if they could speak, the first thing they'd all say is, I could eat that. They could eat all day long, whatever you gave them. Dogs are omnivores. They don't care whether it's animal, vegetable, or mineral. They'll eat it. That's what dogs are like. And she says, that's why the dogs hang around the tables, because something will fall off, and they'll get it. What an amazing thing to say by a Canaanite woman to a Jewish man. Give me some crumbs. Give me some crumbs. Do you know, even crumbs from God's table are a banquet when you know you need him. She knew she needed him. And she'd come to the position now that he was God to be worshipped. Not a man, not even a king anymore, but God to be worshipped. God who demanded that she was on her knees before him. Before he would answer her. You see, you can't come to God on your terms. You can't come to Jesus on your terms. You can only come on his terms. Everyone who comes to the Father must come by me, he said. I am the way, the truth, and the life. There's no other way. You come my way, or you don't come at all. That's a choice. It's a bold choice. But it's the choice that's expressed in God's word, and this woman knew it. And though times were hard, and although she'd been through real difficulties, and although her daughter was in terrible distress, she now knew all of that was worth it because she'd found Jesus. Do you know, sometimes God puts us through really difficult times before he brings us to peace in himself. And even after he brings us to peace in himself, he still maybe let us go through difficult times. No guarantees in the Bible. If you hear people preaching to you that every Christian should be healthy and wealthy, don't believe them. Don't believe them. It's not what the Bible says. The Bible doesn't say that. If anyone was going to be healthy and wealthy, it would have been the Apostle Paul. Nobody, as far as I can tell in reading the Bible, had a more godly approach to life than the Apostle Paul. And yet, you know, you've got to read in 2 Corinthians 11 and 12 and 13 and see the life he was living. Didn't have two halfpennies to rub together half the time. Had to work for his living wherever he went. Ended up in prison Three times he was beaten by the Jews. He was whipped by the Romans. He was shipwrecked. He had an eye complaint, we believe. He may have even been a hunchback. There are some people who believe that, because he had a thorn in the flesh. But all of those things helped Paul to know God better. And this woman, through the pain that she endured, found Christ. And then she obtained the reward. So you've got to know what you need. Know what your problem is. You come to Jesus and you press your request on his terms, not your terms. And then you receive the reward. She did. Jesus said to her, "Woman, you have great faith. Your request is granted." And her daughter was healed at that moment. And she was a believer in Jesus from that day onwards. Because she came to him and she found in him everything that she needed. And she was saved simply on the basis of her faith in Jesus Christ. But it wasn't simple to get there, was it? Jesus had to lead her there, in this case, with some hard realities. And maybe that's what's got to happen with you. There's a wonderful couple of verses in Paul's letter to the Colossians, which I think helps us to understand what happened with this woman. It comes in Colossians chapter 1 and verse 21. He says, he's talking about how the Colossians became believers. He says, "Once you were alienated from God and were enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior. But now he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death to present you holy in his sight, without blemish and free from accusation, if you continue in your faith established and firm and do not move from the hope held out in the gospel. This is the gospel that you heard and that has been proclaimed to every creature under heaven, and of which I, Paul, became a servant." So this woman was no longer an alien to Israel. As a Canaanite, she was an illegal alien, if you like. But now, not anymore. She's not alienated anymore. She's been reconciled to God. Now there's a perfect reconciliation. She's been brought into God's kingdom. If we'd read another part in that same chapter of Colossians, she's been transferred from the kingdom of darkness into the kingdom of his dear son. She's now in the kingdom. And that's because she believed what Jesus said. It wasn't faith alone, in a sense, that saved her. It was Jesus who saved her, and her faith was to take hold of him and trust him. And I have to ask, have you done that? Have you done that? Not do you believe this is a good church? Not do you believe the words of the songs that you sing? Not do you believe that the people here are good people? But do you believe that only Jesus can save you? And you're saying to God, "God, I know I'm a sinner. I know I can't save myself. I trust Jesus." And if you do that, and like this woman, you'll get the reward. She saw it a bit quicker than some of us have seen it. Straight away, her daughter was healed. Some of us may go through a lot of trouble in this life. But one day, we will see Jesus in glory. And we will be with him because we will see him as he is. How fantastic will that be? Remember in the Old Testament, Jacob spent 7 years with the wrong woman. And it seemed to him like a moment because he was thinking of the woman he really loved. Well, this life is like the blink of an eye in eternity. And we will spend eternity in the presence of the glory of God if we come to Christ. Well, dear friends, think of that woman. Don't get upset by Jesus. Listen to him and come to him, and you too will be saved. Well, we're going to close with a couple of songs now.